Welcome to our inquiry together. I will first of all explain the form. The form is that one of you is invited to come and sit here on this vacant cushion and ask or come with a question. It could be a question perhaps about your practice, a question about the Dharma, or a question that you've been reflecting on and contemplating in your life. Please make it something that is relevant to you rather than a theoretical question, in which case you can just Google. At any time during the inquiry, you may say thank you and leave, and I may say thank you, and you also leave. So sometimes the inquiry comes to a rather natural end and a conclusion. At other times, we end up with more questions than the one we began with. And the inquiry process goes on for weeks and months and sometimes years. Inquiry is one of the factors of awakening, and bringing inquiry about the nature of our practice, our experience, our life, bringing inquiry to all of this is a very valuable and precious form. It can be that as you listen, you of course have a commentary going on within your own heart and mind. And you'll be evaluating and measuring and having all kinds of judgments and thinking, well, why doesn't Radha say this? Or why did she say that? And so on. Or you might be thinking, oh, this is counselling. It is not. Inquiry is inquiry into the nature of reality, and inquiry always points to freedom and liberation. Sometimes, of course, there are similar themes to those which we would perhaps take up in therapy. Sometimes, however, you will be tempted after the inquiry to go up to the person and make some comment. Please don't do that. Please just allow the person to reflect on the direct experience they've had with me. If there's any kind of aftermath from the inquiry, I will take it up with the person. So please just be very respectful of the person's space and the silence, and don't interfere, please. When I was here last time in Israel, there were a number of very emotional and deep and quite profound inquiries, actually, but they were very hard for some people to listen to. If that were the case and you were finding that you were getting rather distressed, it's fine just to take a walk instead. It's also unusual for someone to be distressed about listening to an inquiry. So the practice is one of listening to what's said outwardly and also listening inwardly. We're listening to what is actually said, but we're also looking and seeing and noticing that which is also unspoken. So it's a totality of experience, and most people find it a really interesting and useful experience. So please be patient with the listening. Please be incredibly respectful and just sit and see what happens inwardly for you. Sometimes, of course, the person is asking a question which is the question that you would like to have asked, or a question that is very relevant to you. If it's a question that you find absolutely boring, please just sit and listen respectfully and patiently anyway. That is the practice. Also very unlikely. I haven't heard boring as a complaint in inquiry yet. Between each inquiry, we'll have a few minutes of silence. And then I'll ring the bell and ask for the next person to come. And you'll notice that the inquiries are being recorded. If you don't wish for them to be recorded, just say so and we'll turn the recorders off. No problem. So let's just sit quietly for the moment and then we'll begin. And if you could please say your name at the beginning. With the recording?
Yes. Good evening.
Good evening.
My name is Izhar, and thank you for the retreat. My question is about the subject we talked before the last walking.
Mm-hmm. In the Dharma talk?
Yes. I've been practicing trying not to be too divine between the eye and what's happening in the five levels. And it was really blessing, the moment that you're getting to a point where there's no words to describe the situation.
Yes.
Practicing it, I found myself with other people as well and other things as well. And my question is, where are the others in this? Because the same as I don't have the eye, so the same the other does not have his eye.
Yes, yes.
And that I'm trying to find the relationship between not I and not you.
Yes! Okay, wonderful, a wonderful question. Okay, so when you are practicing and there's a great feeling of freedom, what happens to the I, the sense of I in you?
Disappears, melted.
Yes. So it recedes, it dissolves, it's not in the forefront of consciousness. And what's that accompanied by? What do you feel when that happens?
Joy, love, happiness.
Yes.
Peacefulness.
Yes.
But it's only words, it's behind this.
Yes. But there's joy and love and happiness and peace. Is it only words, or is this a reality for you in that moment?
It's like being.
Yes, yes.
It's a reality.
Yes. So it's being, but in that being, is there any difficulty?
Yes and no.
Okay.
The yes is because at that moment there's nothing. I'm feeling like not limited even.
Oh, beautiful, beautiful. So You're touching into a sense of the limitless, where there doesn't seem to be a limit anywhere.
Right.
Okay. I saw you nodding during the talk. I could see that you were understanding. So, here you are. You are in a sense of vastness with peace in your heart and joy. You're seeing the limitless nature that it's possible to access, the very natural state of our heart when the eye is not in the way.
Mm-hmm.
So what was the problem part of it?
I'm trying to connect with the others in the world. It seems like when I'm going out of it, I found myself in divided world.
Okay. When we come to retreat, could it be that instead of our usual view where we think we're stepping out of life, could it be that we're truly stepping into life instead? Could this be the reality of what it is to be alive?
Yes.
Yes?
It can be.
Okay. But there's a fear coming up, isn't there, of how can I connect to others if I'm like this?
It's not the fear, it's the...
What is it?
It's the difficulties of first knowing that what is happening is something which is me also. Mm-hmm. And all the forms that appears are part of me, but yet I don't really understand, and the moment I try to think about it, starts to be differentiations.
Okay.
And the feeling of unity is disappearing.
Okay. So there's a sense of limitlessness and formlessness everywhere, which includes you.
In my words, it's me.
Yes. In your words, it's you. Yes.
Agree. It's not I or me, that the same I of me in the beginning, but it's like everything, it's me.
Yes. So we have the sense then that I am everything.
Right.
Take a look out here. Would the everything include all of these people?
Of course.
Of course.
Not only the people, the room, the microphone, the bell.
Everything. Okay. So, what is the difficulty exactly? The limitless includes you, the big you, everybody, everything.
It's not staying a long time. Then I come back to the story and I get inside the involvement of...
Yes, okay. So the experience itself of this expansiveness actually comes to an end.
Right. And which there is no end.
Yes! So the experience is of the limitless, but our experience is according to time, aren't they? And so time is of the nature to begin and end.
It's not existing.
Ah, we're back to the limitless again and the timeless. Yes. Okay, let's stay with that. From this timeless understanding of the limitless nature of all things, is there any difficulty anywhere?
From that point, there's no difficulties.
Okay, from that point, there's no difficulty at all. Not with you, nor with anybody or anything in the world.
And it seems like I'm in both points, both places. The same times where I can see that there is no end and limitless, I am in a limit world with a limit mind.
Yes. Does the limitless include the limited?
Yes.
Exactly. So our limitless understanding must include us when we're not seeing with such great vision, when we're not recognizing the ultimate nature of things, where we're caught up. So the limitless nature of things must include us with our difficulties sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The limitless nature of things also includes all of these forms, doesn't it? These people yes. out here. So, please sit and look out here for a little longer. Look and see, just sit and look around.
From here.
Just sitting. Yes.
I feel the love, and I feel the unity.
Yes.
The connection, and yet I feel like there is part of it. It's wanting to stay.
Yes.
Still separated.
Yes.
It's like.
So the separation comes when the I forms again and says, I want this to be like this all the time. What do you know about conventional experience? It shifts, it changes. It's impermanent.
It is not permanent.
No. Yet, does the insight stay? Does the insight from your understanding of the limitless stay?
Please, can you say it again?
Yes. When we have experiences, as you just described, there's an insight that comes from it. There's the wisdom of the knowing of the limitless nature of things.
Mm-hmm.
When that experience of relationship and relating and just being in the world changes and shifts. So from here to there, looking out here, when it shifts, does the wisdom remain?
Yes.
Yes.
Welcome.
Thank you.
My question is also about the Dharma talk you gave.
Mm-hmm.
I wondered if I feel attracted or the opposite to something or to someone. Is it right to say that at the same moment I feel that way, I am attached to the I? Or does it need some more attachment?
Okay, good question. In the face of attraction and aversion, either way, are we necessarily bound?
No.
No. Say more.
Well, it depends what follows, mm-hmm. and how I react to that aversion or attraction.
Yes. And if you were really free, how would you respond to the attraction and the aversion?
Kind of equanimity.
Yes, indeed. Indeed. So our attraction follows usually the pleasant feeling tone, the Vedana, doesn't it? The feeling tone of experience, we're attracted. Or the opposite. If there's something unpleasant, we usually want to avoid it. And if it's a person and a relationship, then we want the relationship to work out or move towards the person or away from the person. If we can be steady right at that point with our feeling world and act with freedom, then we're really free. But if we're bound to our attraction and bound to our aversion, what happens in consciousness?
Very limited.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm. Mm. Is there a particular example you were thinking of?
Well, there are many all the time.
yes. There are many events in the day where we experience either attraction or aversion. And if we can be steady and then act with freedom rather than have consciousness pushed and pulled, then we're free. And as you said, it's equanimity that helps steady us so that we can then act. We can then pursue a relationship or not.
Yeah.
But if we're pushed along by our attraction or repelled by our aversion, then we're caught. We're just responding, we're just reacting rather than responding wisely.
Thank you.
Anything else you'd like to say about this?
I think I felt something like that a week ago.
Yes.
With my daughter.
Yes.
I was really upset with her.
Yes.
And I was very aware to what's going on inside of me.
So you were, disapproving or not liking something?
Yeah, not liking her answer or something like that.
Okay.
Daily thing that happens all the time.
Yes. And what happened? You saw?
I had some distance from this strong feeling that I had inside.
Yes.
So I was even a bit amazed how strong it was.
Mm.
I was looking at it, wow, this is so strong. And she didn't say something very, you know. Um, And it helped me. It helped me take a few minutes to observe this thing that's going on.
Yes, so there was your own emotional reactivity, yet you didn't have to act on that because there was the spaciousness.
Some.
Yeah,
important.
Yeah, even a little helps sometimes. We can just, instead of being reactive to our children, or to our friends, or to our family, with that immediacy of our feeling world, we can just see what a wise response is instead, especially in the role of parent.
Yeah, and I think also that seeing it as anger and not I'm angry, it's like a phenomenon. This is something strong is going on here.
Yes.
And yes. Not really not attaching to that.
Very good. So you saw there was anger. There is anger present, rather than I am angry and I have to act on this and speak my mind and so on.
Yeah.
Mm. So well done, well seen. And of course, the more we practice, the more equanimity we have in the face of our feeling world. And some people have a habit of intense emotional feelings, and others put the lid on feelings and suppress feelings. I have to say, in Israel, it's more the first. Intense emotional feelings. So, wisdom in the face of the pleasant and the unpleasant, the attraction and the aversion. Wonderful, because it brings release, doesn't it?
Yeah, and freedom.
Beautiful. So thank you very much for your question.
Thank you.
And for expressing your inner wisdom. It's beautiful. Beautiful to see.
Thank you.
I've been having some trouble lately integrating my practice with my daily life.
Yes.
I was recently fired from my job.
And, oh.
What brought me to the Dharma was struggles with work and self-discipline and these kind of things. And though it's been a difficult time, I've stuck with my own cushion practice.
Yes.
But has kind of lost some of the velocity and the rest of the things that I'm doing, that it very much affects me. And I was wondering if you had any advice on closing that gap again, because when they were both working at the same time, I was happiest and with least suffering.
Yes. Okay, so tell me what the situation was like when there was the least suffering. This is my great interest. The least suffering. Were you working then?
Both. It was periods, like two periods. Once when I was independent, not with a regular.
What sort of work do you do?
Design.
Okay.
And once when I was working, but both times I had a regular practice,
mm-hmm.
and I brought the same kind of, diligence.
Yes.
To my work and as I did to my practice, and then I was off the cushion and off my office seat, very free, very relaxed, and not worried about what I haven't done.
Okay, so when you were practicing and when you were working, everything seemed fine. And then you became what? A bit complacent or something, and then you didn't work so hard and you didn't practice so hard.
Actually, the meditation has been fairly consistent.
Okay.
But it's like the not as much in the other things.
We don't hear.
Oh, you can't hear?
Not so much with the other things.
Okay. All right. So what needs to shift in order for you to be free with the least amount of suffering? Sounds ominous.
I wish I could bring the same kind of diligence to my work and as I could to my practice.
Okay. So, what's more interesting, your practice or your work?
Depends.
Yeah, okay. So, with the practice, you can be diligent, interested, curious, connected, disciplined. Yes?
If I understand where you're going with the question, I think with my practice, it's clear what I need to do.
Yes.
And it's clear there's no failure mode.
Ah, here we go. Yeah. Okay, so because you lost your job, are you feeling as if you are now unsuccessful or feeling a sense of failure?
Not really. It's more if I sit and the meditation doesn't go well, I don't self-talk myself. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
But if I sit and I don't produce what I need to produce, it's a problem.
Okay. All right. So let's go there.
Yeah.
So you're sitting, you're at work, you're not producing or designing what you need to. What happens in the thought world? Where does the sense of I land and grip and cling?
I'm not doing what I'm supposed to.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not good, I'm not.
Yes.
Yeah.
So this is the I'm not good enough, I can't do it well. Yes? So these are the thought formations. What else? What would another one be?
All I've done isn't worthwhile or isn't helping, or it worked in the past but it isn't working now.
Yes.
Those thoughts.
Yes, so life's not working out for me now. and a bit of I'm not good enough. So when an event happens at work or in life, it happens due to a myriad of causes and conditions, doesn't it? Which are actually not about you, necessarily. Yes?
Yeah.
What are the contributing factors that... what are the factors that contributed to the situation at work?
It's not even related to me. It's less about actually the job. It's just I was bringing that as those are the conditions that returned me into this loop with working with my like working alone. I guess the answer is there. I was working with people.
Yes.
And like now I'm again alone with
yes.
myself.
Yes.
So that would be the contributing factor.
Yes, and when you're alone with yourself, there's more ground, isn't there, for the I'm not good enough, I can't do this, what worked before didn't work, and so on. Okay. Is it true that you're not good enough? Is it really true?
No.
No. Louder.
No.
It's not true, is it? Exactly. So, is it true? Are some of the other things true that you said about yourself?
It seems true that I can't, at the moment, bring the same consistency, say, to the way I work or the way I approach things.
Okay. And would there be a way through that? Would there be a way to shift and change that? So sometimes when we see that certain conditions lead to suffering or a difficulty, we can actually change some of those conditions. Sometimes we can't do anything about the causes and conditions, but sometimes we actually can.
Here I get mixed up often between trying to change the conditions
yes.
and trying to change myself.
Yes. Yes. Well seen, well said. So, let's start with you and yourself and this tendency to think about yourself negatively. Could you just drop it right now? Don't wait. Otherwise, in a year's time, you'll still be struggling with the same thing. You were clear that it's not true that you're not good enough. So drop the negativity towards yourself. Just drop all of that. Then what's your relationship to success and failure? Because sometimes when we achieve something, we feel like we're a success. Sometimes we feel like we're a failure. And the I wraps itself around this, and it's a very painful thing to feel like we've failed or we're not a success. And we love being a success. So, what can you do about that? How could you respond differently?
What I've been doing is just kind of relaxing around the not doing or the not. And then, again, this is the place where it gets mm-hmm. messed up, is... if I relax, then I don't do.
Yes. Yeah. So
I'm not angry at myself at that point, but yes. I am also not doing what I'm supposed to be doing.
Yes. So you're not being productive. Being a spaced out meditator isn't going to help you with your work. I'm sorry. So we have to have the wisdom to see, okay, when is action needed? when do I need to push myself a little bit more, and when do I need to back off? So, what's your relationship to success and failure in your work?
There is success, there is failure.
Yes, exactly. Sometimes we succeed and sometimes we fail. This is the duality of life. And yet so much of our identities, certainly in Australia, for the world of men, so much of our identities are just wrapped around succeeding in the workplace. For women too, of course, but very much so. The sense of I gets wrapped around having to be seen to be successful, having to succeed, having to do well and not to fail. But the reality is, sometimes there's success and sometimes there's failure. It is unavoidable. It is just one of the dualities of life. It absolutely is. And so there needs to be real steadiness in the face of that, and the not letting your self identify with being the failure. Because if you do that, you won't actually apply yourself through fear of being a failure. Okay? So, not holding back. Not fearing doing because you might fail. Seeing yourself as capable and worthy. And not buying in to the self-criticism. Leaving it behind. And then your work will flow and blossom and shine, and you'll be more productive than ever. Okay?
Thank you.
Thank you. So I'd just like to offer a short reflection on the inquiries that we had today. With the first, sometimes we can have that rather exquisite experience of the sense of self, the me, subsiding and dropping away. This can occur when we look at the sky at night, when we see the moon rise, as we did last night, or the moon in the sky, when we look at the ocean, or just in any moment, any time, anywhere. We can have this wonderful sense of I am everything, as was beautifully described. And that everything seems to be limitless. And the feeling that comes with that is a great sense of beauty and of freedom without a problem anywhere. And then, of course, the intensity of this quite refined experience shifts and changes. And the ordinary, more conventional idea of self suddenly reappears. Yet, what remains is the wisdom and understanding from the experience. The limitless nature of all things must include everything, and that includes us when we're feeling caught up, when we're feeling bound, when we're feeling limited, when we're not feeling very free at all. So the limitless nature of things includes all of that as well. When we have a deep insight into the nature of things, as was described, there's the knowing of that. And that knowing doesn't disappear just because we're occasionally caught up or we're occasionally distressed. What we need to do in that situation is then recall or remember our deep understanding, and then we come back to resting in that. When we rest in our deep knowing, the rest is easier. We're not swept along with our own difficulties. So, what we need to do is over and over train the mind to the freedom. We come back to the knowing of our deep understanding. We sit in it, we rest in it. Can't hear? We sit in it, we rest in it, at the end. So, to summarise, the limitless includes the limited. So it includes us on a bad day. It's okay. It includes everything. And of course, once we know that there's that wonderful quality of the limitless heart and the feeling of connection to all things, then we can actually use that to be with others. We can, with the love, the compassion, and the joy that was described, meet with others. And this is a huge shift in how to be in this world. So we rest in our deep understanding, we keep coming back to it over and over again until the heart and mind is free and there's a great freedom in our style of relating to others in the world. And if some of you are sitting there thinking, well, I haven't had this wondrous experience, then just really pay attention, because for everybody, every day, for each one of you here, there have been many moments of freedom. We just have to notice them. We just have to see when there isn't a problem anywhere. And much of the time there isn't. We're just not trained to notice them. We're trained, the mind rather naturally goes to the problems. So we have to train the mind to notice and see when there isn't anything that's a difficulty. With the second inquiry about being steady in the face of attraction and aversion, this is really, really important. Every contact we have through the senses, the seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching, and thinking, has very quickly upon it a pleasant or unpleasant feeling tone. And that feeling tone develops into attraction and aversion, and with that comes usually some kind of desire or want. We want what we like and we don't want what we don't like. Or it can come with a strong emotion. In this case, the emotion was anger. I didn't like something. We feel the surge of reactivity through the body. This is the feeling and emotional world, but we can learn to be steady with that. And when we're steady with it, of course, there's freedom to act with wisdom, not just react depending on whether we feel attraction or aversion, or whether we like something or we don't like it. So the freedom of the heart and mind can really be found just in that moment of equanimity to the pleasant and the unpleasant. This is part of the Dharma teaching, and it's revolutionary when we actually get it, because it frees up consciousness. Then we can act freely instead of consciousness being pushed and pulled to all kinds of reactive mood states. It's liberating. And finally, we had the inquiry about practice and work. And of course, our practice hopefully makes our work life a little easier. Sometimes, however, we see that our relationship in our work life and our worldly life is very bound up with a habitual way of dealing with success and failure. There will be success, there will be failure. And it's wisdom to be steady in the face of that duality of life. It's one of the pairs of what's called the eight worldly conditions that the Buddha talked about. And generally we like success and we don't like failure. And then we conclude, of course, the eye lands in the mental formations in the world of thought, and we start to conclude that we're not good enough, or we didn't do the right thing. When very often the success or failure in the business world has nothing to do actually with what we've done. It can be to do with other factors and causes and conditions. So sometimes if we feel we're not good enough, we then don't apply ourselves. There's a hesitation or a holding back. And then what we have to offer isn't seen or known or freely given. So in the world of meditation, we are encouraged to see the falsity of those little one-line statements that colour and shape our life, such as, I'm not good enough. They bring much suffering. And letting them go is sometimes as easy as making a clear decision and going, I am not going to live bound by that anymore. Enough. So thank you to the three who inquired, and thank you very much to everybody for listening so respectfully and quietly. It's now time for some walking meditation, and that will be followed by an evening program of some
meta-inclined meditation.
Meta-inclined meditation. Meta is loving kindness meditation. Thank you very much, and I'll see you tomorrow.